Oscar for this evening, Barbara from El Cajon.
Woo! My name is Barbara, and I'm an alcoholic. Wow, welcome to the newcomers. You know, I really hope that you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, because that's the way I got here, and it really helps. Birthday people, it's so nice to know so many people, you know, and including Janice. And congratulations to both of you. That's great. Okay, is that better? No? Yes? Talk like this?
Talk like this.
This one right here. I'm talking. Anyway, happy birthday to the birthday people. Woo! Thank you. Thank you. Well, this is the place to be. Who would have guessed on Saturday night? It's really, really nice to see so many people here and so many people that I know. You know, that's really, really fills my heart. My sobriety date is August 1st, 1989. I just celebrated 23 years of continuous sobriety. That is a miracle. It's also my natal birthday, so I get all kinds of congratulations from people who have no idea that I'm sober. It's really fun. So it's like a double whammy. It's a good deal. The reason that happened is because I had to reset my sobriety date. And so it just didn't happen by God's. Well, it was by God, but I picked that date because I figured it would be easy for me to remember. To date, I haven't had to change it, and that's really very, very, very cool. My home group is Sunday Morning Battery Chargers, and I started going to that meeting the very first week I was sober. The way it ended up to be my home group is the secretary at the time, it was Big Rick, and he made the announcement that if anybody wanted to make the Battery Chargers their home group, that there were only two spots left, and if you were interested, you better hurry up and get up there and sign up. I'm not the only one who fell for that, but it worked, and it's been my home group ever since. I didn't even know what a home group was, but I wasn't going to miss out on anything. Oh, my goodness. I have a sponsor. And she sponsors a lot of women in AA. That's one of the reasons I asked her to be my sponsor. She has a sponsor who sponsors a lot of women in AA. And I have sponsees, really, really awesome sponsees, who sponsor other women in AA. And it is so neat to see that passing the message on through generations or whatever you call it, just from one alcoholic to another. It's really, really special. Oh, goodness. I spoke here once before, years ago, and I had all these notes, and I broke down my talk into decades. And I'm like in my 60s, so that was a lot of decades, you know, to go through. And it was neat. It kind of kept things, easier for me to do. But tonight I'm just going to wing it and see what happens. So I drank for 28 years. I went through a lot of people, places, and things. I lived in a lot of different places, different countries. I was married to two alcoholics. When I got to San Diego, it was all going to be different here. And it wasn't different at all. You know, I I drank every day. I threw up every day. I complained about everything. I didn't like anybody, certainly didn't like me. A miracle, I got a job. It was like, that was amazing because I know that the alcohol was just coming out of my pores, but I got a job. And I had always been able to find a job. Throughout all my working, I started working when I was 19, and I started drinking when I was 18. So I was able to find work for a long time. And that was kind of my criteria. As long as I could have a job and pay my bills, then I didn't have a problem with drinking. And since I've been in AA, I've learned that everybody has that definition of what an alcoholic is, and it's always that person over there. It's never the person right here. So when I came to AA, I had to learn about the disease of alcoholism because I didn't know anything about it. I got to AA because a neighbor suggested that I might feel better physically if I quit drinking. And I had never tried that. Now, I had tried a lot of things over the years to make my life better, to make it different, to feel better. But nothing was working at the end. And I didn't know what to do, you know. I tried everything. There wasn't anybody in my life anymore. I was trying to hang on to that job. Because I knew that if I lost that job, I would never find another one. That was the end of the line. And San Diego was kind of the end of the line. So I quit drinking, no problem. Unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, somebody in my body went and bought a bottle after like 3-4 days. Now, how does that happen? You know, and that really surprised me. It really surprised me, and it really scared me. Because I had always just, you make up your mind, you just do it. You know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You know, you just do what you need to do. And I had always been able to do that. And I'd gone through a lot of people doing that. And it wasn't working. It just wasn't working anymore. I remember what it was like drinking that last bottle. I couldn't get drunk. I couldn't feel any better. I was scared. I still threw up. That never changed. But you know, it was like, well, maybe I have a problem with alcohol. And I went to that neighbor and I said, you know, I tried to quit and I couldn't. So maybe I should go to a meeting. And she was ecstatic. She was like, oh, she gave me her very own meeting schedule. I mean, I was really impressed because I didn't share anything that I had. And she gave me her very own meeting schedule. And I didn't know that they were free at meetings. But I was really impressed with that. And I ended up at a Monday night women's meeting in La Mesa. There are people here who are at that meeting. And that is really, really special. I moved so much when I was drinking that I never connected with people. And even in San Diego, I was moving from place to place to place. But anyway, I ended up at that Monday night meeting, and I haven't had a drink since. It's like amazing to me. I asked this woman to be my sponsor because I kept seeing her at meetings because they kept saying, you know, go to a lot of meetings, try not to drink in between meetings. So I thought, okay, I'm going to try that. And I asked this woman to be my sponsor, and she said she would love to be my sponsor. But that the program works better when you're clean and sober. And I went, uh-oh, how does she know? So she also said that she thought it would probably be really hard for me to put down all the chemicals. I had been doing something since I was 18, and I was 45 then. And she said, I'll be there with you to help you. And that always gets me, because that's what I have found in Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't have to do anything alone. There are always people here to help us do whatever it is we need to do. And so there were people there to help me. And then my journey really started. That's how I got my 8-1 sobriety date. So I was so scared then. And yet I remember when I did my first 4th step, I didn't have any fears listed. It was like I had a lot of resentments. I mean, I hated everybody and everything, and it was all your fault. You know, so, but let's go back a little bit. So I started following this sponsor around, and her name is Susan. And I just was so afraid to be in such a large city. I remember that I went with her and a sisters to one of these theaters, like in Mission Valley or somewhere, where they were all together, and I was so terrified. Because I had moved here from a town of like 500 people, and I had really isolated out there. and she just had to kind of hold my arm and just keep me here. And gosh, yesterday I went to the zoo, and that was like, it was a zoo. And there were so many people and kids screaming and running around, and it's like, I thought, what a difference, you know, from being so terrified to go to that theater, and it's just really different today. So we started working the steps together, and she went right out of the big book. It was great. She asked me if I was willing to go to any length to stay sober. She asked me if I was willing to go to a meeting every day. She asked me if I was willing to call her every day. And I thought, whoa, this is pretty extreme, you know. I don't know if I'm really willing to do all this stuff. And she said, well, are you willing to try to do it? And I said, yeah, I'm willing to try. And she said, do you believe in God? And I said, no. I hadn't been raised in any religion. My mother was a socialist atheist, and my father, I'm not really sure what. I thought he was Lutheran all these years, but now that we're talking, that doesn't seem to be the case. So I don't know. I said, no, I didn't believe in God. And she said, well, are you willing to believe? Willing to believe in a power greater than yourself? And I said, yeah, I'm willing to try to do that. And she said, that's all it takes, just that little bit of willingness. And it's true, it works today. All the things that I learned in early sobriety work today. And that's why I keep doing them, because I like what I get out of it, you know. So Susan and I started this journey, and I learned how to trust another woman. Trust anybody. I didn't trust anybody when I got here, including myself. So it was taking all these baby steps to learn how to trust and how to talk to somebody and how to be vulnerable with somebody and how to play and have fun with somebody. You know, all that was new. I hadn't laughed. I don't think it didn't seem like I'd laughed for a really long time. So I learned how to do that in sobriety, and I learned how to dance, and I learned how to go to parties, a lot of potlucks, and life was good, you know. I followed her around. I remember at Old Town Speaker Meeting once, she started just picking up the cups that people had left under their chairs, and so I just did what she did. That's what I always did, just did exactly what she did. And who knew that was service? I didn't know, but she was modeling this program. And I was really, really lucky to find her. After a while, she moved. And I went, oh my gosh, now what? And it just seems like the people that come into my life are just perfect for the moment. And so Susan, I think, kind of saved my life in a lot of ways, laid a really, really good foundation. And we had worked, I don't know, maybe through the fifth step. I don't remember exactly. But anyway, she moved, and I got another sponsor. Her name was Sandy. And Sandy was an older woman, and she just was such a graceful lady. And my parents were both physical education teachers, and I was very much the tomboy. And, you know, I thought, wow, she's a real lady. You know, I want to learn how to do that. And she taught me how to grow up a little bit. Susan was very directive. She told me what to do when, which is exactly what I needed at the time. And Sandy let me make my own decisions and make my own mistakes. And she was always there for me also. And I started to grow and change. And we continued working the steps. And she was also into service. Well, Sandy got really sick, and we all thought she was going to die. This was years later. And so I asked this other gal to be my sponsor, and she's my sponsor today. And I asked her because she has such a strong spiritual program and because she is such a good sponsor, and she sponsors a lot of women. And that's very attractive to me. And I'm current with her today. That's an amazing thing that I heard, that, you know, if you have a sponsor, you need to use that sponsor. you need to call her. You need to talk to her. She needs to know where I'm at. And she does, you know, and she's there for me. So sponsorship is really, really just a wonderful thing, as far as I'm concerned. And I don't know where I would have been without it. You know, I mean, we get here, and it's like a whole different language, you know. It's like, what does all this stuff mean? And how do we do this? And every meeting is different, and why is that? And, you know, it's like just so many questions and so much confusion and so much fear. I didn't realize how much fear. I was just totally riddled with fear. So through working the steps, I borrowed Susan's God. She said, you can use my God until you find your own if you want. I thought that was pretty cool. And she said you could use the group. And you could use good orderly direction. That's God. So, yeah, I picked up on those. And then slowly, slowly, through working the steps, and it says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I think that's what happened. You know, everything changed in my head about God, and I learned to rely on God more, the God of my understanding. I didn't like the word God. I called them the spirit of the universe and different other names, but it doesn't really matter. And that's a really important thing, like Jim was talking about. You know, it's like to find the God of our understanding, that higher power, is what's going to keep us clean and sober one day at a time. And I believe that. I also believe that this is a progressive disease. I didn't know about that either when I got here. And yet I've seen enough people go in and out, and I see how hard it is. You know, they say the first time is a gift, and after that it's harder to get sober. I don't know if that's true, but I've heard that from people. And I do believe that it's a progressive disease. And I believe that without intervention from a power greater than myself, that left to my own devices, I will be drinking and using. I know that. And I don't want to live like that. You know, it wasn't fun. I don't know why I did it for so long, really, looking back. It was never fun. The first time I drank, I was 18, and I thought, well, I'm going to find out what this is all about, you know. And my parents drank every day. They had happy hour every evening. They had a lot of parties. They went to a lot of parties. And yet they were very successful in their careers. They were both teachers. And they just seemed to be able to manage all this. And I thought that I would too. And so I thought, well, I'll just see what this is all about. And I'd gone to 3 different high schools. I was not really connected to any people. I was feeling very apart from. And boy, I tell you, I took that drink and it was like I could do things that I couldn't do without it. But I stole the booze. I drank alone. I threw up. I blacked out. I did some bizarre things. I remember bits and pieces, and then the other people told me of some others. I remember lying to my parents and blaming my parents for not teaching me how to drink right. So all that, you know, just the stealing and the lying and the cheating and the throwing up and that's pretty much how it was every time I drank. And I'm thinking, in retrospect, now why would I want to keep doing that? But there was something that it obviously did for me. It helped me do things that I couldn't do. It helped me feel more secure somehow in myself. I don't know. And it never really changed throughout all those years. At the end of my drinking, I was doing the exact same things. And I had long since stopped going out to drink. I was drinking at home behind closed doors with the drapes drawn and the phone unplugged, which was really funny because I didn't know anybody, so nobody was going to call me. But just in case. Oh, my goodness. And then I got on probation with this job, and that was pretty scary because I thought, uh-oh, you know, this is the last one in the whole world. If I lose this, I'm never going to be able to find another job. So it was the fear of losing the job. It was the feeling sick and tired of being sick and tired, trying everything that I knew how to do and nothing was working, and trying to quit and not being able to. All those things just kind of landed me in AA. And gosh, it's been a wonderful journey. You know, I've learned a lot of things here. I'm trying to think of all the things that I've learned, and it's like I'm just such a different person now. Of course, I'm older, and that makes things somewhat easier, I think, in some respects. You know, I can slow down. I retired from that job that I was put on probation for. I kept that job, and I was there for 23 years, and that is a miracle. I don't miss it at all, I'll tell you. I mean, it was neat that I had it, but I don't miss it. I don't miss anything about it, and I love when you hear on the news, oh, the traffic jams and everything, that I'm going, I don't have to do that, you know. I don't have to get up when it's dark if I don't want to, and I don't have to drive in rush hour, and you know what, that's okay with me. And my mother died a couple of years ago, and that was tough, but, you know, I have a lot of support in AA, and we never have to go through anything alone. And I've learned to feel the feelings, And I was always so afraid of those feelings and so afraid to cry because I thought if I cry, I'm never going to stop. And the feelings were going to be there forever. And it was just way too scary. And I was taught to, you know, put on a smiley face and, you know, just kind of keep on going. But I learned here that, you know, you have to go through it to go through it. And what a concept. And that it's okay that that crying is really cleansing and that it doesn't last forever. And that healing that takes place is gradual. In my drinking days, I had a cat that was really, really like my surrogate child. And we traveled together. I did a lot of traveling. We traveled together, and, you know, this was like my cat. It was a great, great thing. And one day, I was like just frazzled, and I don't know what I was on, but maybe not anything, but I was pretty frazzled, and I backed out that car, and I hit the cat. And I killed the cat. And it was like, oh, my God. Now, I did not grieve that. I didn't feel that. I didn't deal with that at all. When I got sober, I started dealing with that. Every year in all my meetings on, what was it, Halloween, Black Cat on Halloween, I would cry and grieve and go. And it took several years, you know, to go through that process. But AA was here for me, you know, and it gradually, you know, just kind of dissipates a bit. And then I was able to get another cat, and, you know, we move on, and that's good. But I had to go through the feeling of it and the grieving of it to keep growing and changing. And so when my mother died, that was, you know, that was tough, but it was the same kind of thing. It's like okay to grieve. It's okay to do this. It's get back to basics, you know, halt. Halt is really, really important to me today. It's very important to me, that hungry, angry, lonely, tired. If any of those are off whack, then I am in danger. I'm in danger of making foolish choices. I'm in danger, maybe not of drinking today, but, you know, if I don't deal with these things, I will drink because that's my solution. And even though it doesn't feel like it right now, I know that if I get that restless, irritable, and discontent, and it keeps going on and on and on, that I'm going to want it to stop, and I'm going to stop it the way I know how to do that. And that's not what I want. So I substitute. I had to change all my rewards to other rewards. I drank as a reward. Every night I'd come home from work, and that was my reward. I could drink until I passed out. Well, all of a sudden, I started going to meetings right after work, my sponsor's suggestion. And so I would go right from work to a meeting, and I went to meetings that took, you know, that gave all the tokens. You know, some meetings only give 90 days and a year. But other meetings will give 30, 60, 90, 6 months, 9 months, everything in between. And I'm going, that's what I need, because that was my new reward. I was marking off the days on my calendar and going for those tokens. And I was told to take tokens at all the meetings that I go to, regular meetings that I go to, and then you can have more tokens to give away to other people. And I like that. So I took a lot of tokens for my 23rd birthday because I'm retired. I could go to a lot of meetings today. And I have added some new meetings. I got divorced in sobriety. I was about five, I guess, when I did that. It took me 5 years to get to the point where You know, he was living in another state, so it wasn't like we had a good relationship going on. But it took me 5 years to get to the point where I was willing to move on from that and give up that house that I thought was mine, and you know, all the things that, and there was a lot of fear in there too. There were a lot of emotions around that, and it takes what it takes, you know. And I remember people coming up to me, and it was kind of like with the fourth step. They'd say, "Have you done your fourth step yet?" You know, I'd say, "No, I'm working on it," you know. And so eventually I did that, and they were saying, "Well, did you get that divorce yet?" No, not yet. But eventually it does all come around. So I'm trying to think of the big things that have happened in my sobriety. You know, I drank over the big things and the little things. I drank every day, so it didn't really matter. But sometimes the big things are easier to not drink over in some respects, because I know, like with that divorce and with my mother dying, that I needed to reach out, you know, that I was really hurting and I needed support. And I went out to get that. It's those little things when I say, "Oh, this isn't that big of a deal. I can handle this myself. I really don't want to bother this with anybody." You know, that's the stuff that I need to keep current with at least one person about, because it's those little things that are going to trip me up in the end, I think. And that thinking I can do it myself is one of my character defects. So I have to be really, really careful of that. I have a lot of character defects, but you know, after doing the steps, at least I'm aware of most of them. Some keep rearing their heads, and some get really subtle. You know, it's like, "Oh, I think I've got that one under control," and then it comes out in this other area. So there's always something to learn and grow in this program. And I was always looking for something that was going to last forever. You know, I tried that with jobs and men and just all different kinds of things. I tried a lot of different spiritual avenues. I went to a lot of different churches. I checked out a lot of things. And I never really found anything that spoke to me that was going to stay with me forever, for the rest of my life. And I found that in Alcoholics Anonymous. And what that is to me is that God of my understanding. And that's, who would have guessed? I certainly was not coming here looking for that. And I was just coming here to feel better, you know, not even to quit drinking, just to feel better, because I didn't like how I felt. And it's been a wonderful, wonderful journey. I have tried a lot of different things in AA. You know, I tried a lot of things when I was out there drinking and using, and that doesn't change. I still don't want to miss anything. So when I heard about being a coordinator for a meeting, I thought, "Well, I'll try that." And I've done that with a lot of different service positions. But it started with somebody volunteering me, I think, to do something like secretary or something, which was a really big deal at the time, because I thought, "Oh my gosh, what if I do it wrong, you know, and people are going to be, you know, critiquing me." And I see it, critiquing me. And, you know, and it was scary, but you can't mess it up. It's just the most amazing thing. It's like we do the best we can. There's always somebody to help. There's no right or wrong way to do it. If I think I've messed it up, then I learned that that's not really true at all, you know. Maybe I'm being hard on myself or whatever, but it's like if we just get out there and do it. You know, I've heard that AA is a program of action, and it's also takes a lot of willingness. And I'm going to read one thing here before I close. It's on September 1st, imagine that, from the Daily Reflections, and it says, willingness to grow. If more gifts are to be received, our awakening has to go on. Sobriety fills the painful hole in the soul that my alcoholism created. Often I feel so physically well that I believe my work is done. However, joy is not just the absence of pain. It is the gift of continued spiritual awakening. Joy comes from ongoing and active study, as well as application of the principles of recovery in my everyday life, and from sharing that experience with others. My higher power presents many opportunities for deeper spiritual awakening. I need only to bring into my recovery the willingness to grow. Today, I am ready to grow. So it started with willingness, and the willingness never goes away. The need for willingness never goes away. Sometimes the willingness goes away. Sometimes I have to pray for willingness. And I've heard people even praying to be willing. So whatever it takes. But if I keep on doing what I'm doing, I'm going to keep on getting what I'm getting. My first sponsor used to say that all the time. And I like what I'm getting today. I wouldn't want to have any other life. And, you know, I always wanted to be somebody else, doing something else, living somewhere else. And I don't feel that today. And that is a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. So thank you very much.